Welcome back to the Longevity Now podcast, the place for all your news and views of life extension from around the world. Today's interview is a follow-up from 11 years ago when I first discussed anti-aging and telomeres with Dr. William Andrews of Sierra Sciences. It was a very optimistic podcast as a lot of discoveries were going on at the time. So why have no paradigm-shifting rejuvenation treatments made it into the mainstream marketplace? Dr. Andrews has a few answers for us. He also highlights some progress in telomere lengthening and clinically proven products you can buy right now. Plus, you don't want to miss the discussion about biomarker testing either, as many of us use those products. Here we go. And now I would like to welcome to the Longevity Now podcast someone who was on the podcast a few years back, and that is Dr. William Andrews, founder of Sierra Sciences. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And we had you on 11 years ago, and we were talking about how optimistic we were, of course, about progress in rejuvenation research. And you had mentioned telomerase inducers, and you're working on that. And over the last, say, 11 years, what would you say is the progress that you've had at Sierra Sciences?
Sorry to say that the progress hasn't been that great towards exactly what we want to do. The problem has always been that investors really want quicker return on investments, and they fund things, and then after we succeed, they want to sell the company. So, and then I lose all my intellectual property. And as a result, a lot of the stuff that we wanted to do never got done because we never were able to get the correct amount of funding from the correct sources. Since 11 years ago, I have completely taken over my company. I now own 100% of it.
And let's just stop there for a second, because a lot of researchers, doctors, investors do listen to this podcast, and we do talk about the process of starting a company and funding a company and getting this very important research done. And it's very good to hear your perspective on that. And what you're saying is that it's very difficult to get the funding you need to do the research and the product development the way you think it needs to be done to get out there in the marketplace, where most investors are looking for a quick buck, or they have different ideas on how things could develop, how things are going to be licensed. Is that a real tension you see? Well, obviously you just mentioned it at Sierra Sciences, but have you heard that's kind of industry-wide too? Have you heard that happens elsewhere?
Yes, I have so many friends. I mean, that have started companies that would find investors, then the investors would completely take over, redirect everything, and lose their company. I have colleagues, some of them you've probably interviewed, that have lost their companies as a result. You know, when you go to a business conference, you always hear people say, well, the number one goal of starting a company is having an exit strategy to be able to sell it. And when you start a company, the goal is to sell it. Well, some of us are a little different. Okay, so I'm an inventor. Okay, I'm not a marketer. I'm not a product salesman. I'm not trying to create a product. I'm trying to invent something. And I could do it the academic route, but that's got its problems too. So I've chosen to try to go through a route of inventing products by finding investors. But I need to find an investor that will invest in the dream coming true, not just the dream. Okay. And I often say this at many conferences that I talk about, that investors, they'll invest in me because I have a really great history of getting products invented, like human growth hormone, tissue plasminogen activator, beta seron, thrombomodulin, erythropoietin. I'm inventor of two of the most top illegal sports enhancing drugs, HGH and erythropoietin, which Lance Armstrong used. Drugs coming out on the market now called amelzastat that I'm the inventor of, things like that. So I've got a good record of inventing things, but I'm not somebody that actually then markets it. Okay, now every product that every pharmaceutical company sells, every therapy, every diagnostic, everything was never invented by the company that sells them. And people aren't aware of this. They make a big deal about what great company they are because they have this product, but it was actually somebody else that invented it and they licensed it from that inventor. Well, I'm one of those inventors. I'm not trying to do it for the credit. I don't care. You never hear about me when they talk about human growth hormone or erythropoietin or beta seron. because I did my work. I invented the product, and after hundreds of other scientists had failed, I was pretty successful at this. I built a really great track record, and that's what I'm my business is. My business is I'm trying to invent a way to stop the aging process now. That's always been my main obsession. And as soon as I get investors, the first thing they want me to do is, well, do something else first to add value to the company, to bring us a quicker return on investment. And I say, sure. I mean, when I started this company 25 years ago, I put up with that for 10 years. And then the investors all decided to sell the company. And it was a real struggle for me to be able to change that thing and end up with 100% ownership. And most of the discoveries that we did make that are of value, in my opinion, were using the money that was still in the bank after I had taken over from my other investors. So, one key product that I have that I'm very proud of is called C0314818, which is a code name because that was our 314,818th chemical that we tested for its ability to induce telomerase. And it was the strongest one. We've tested over 500,000, but that's still the strongest one we've ever discovered. I put it on the shelf because it wasn't strong enough to reverse aging, which is what I want to do. It wasn't important enough to use as a tool to study aging, which is what I want to do. But then one day a company came along and asked if they could license that from me to make a product out of it. And I said, sure. And so I started getting royalties from that. That company is called One Truth 818 in New Zealand. They now market that as a skin cream and it's doing really well. They paid for their own clinical studies, had really great results.
And for the listeners, One Truth 818, they could look that up if they want to, if they're
Yes.
interested in that,
Oh,
right?
yeah,
And
all one
it's
word.
a telomerase inducer that works, but it's probably not enough to reverse aging by your estimation, right? To
Well,
reverse
during,
aging.
yeah, and by the way, it's ONETRUTH 818.com.
Got it.
But they did clinical studies, and in the clinical studies, they did see signs of age reversal. And I thought the clinical studies were done really well. And that really confused me because it didn't make any sense. Because I estimated that it was about 16% as potent as something we needed to reverse aging. But then some papers came out, especially by one of the Nobel Prize winners in telomere biology, saying that telomerase preferentially lengthens the shortest telomeres. So even though it wasn't strong enough to lengthen all the telomeres, we believe it was strong enough to lengthen the shortest telomeres. And that was causing
Interesting, very
some
interesting.
age reversal kind of things.
And let's stay on that subject briefly here about One Truth 818 and the compound they use to extend telomeres. Of course, measuring telomere length is a marker for how much you might have reversed aging. But what about other biomarkers and aging tests? Are you aware of any gold standard tests that you would recommend, or what have you seen out there in the marketplace?
I'm not aware of any. Personally, there are biomarkers that do correlate with aging. When you reverse those biomarkers, all you can say is that you reverse the biomarker. You cannot say you reversed aging. There's a lot of videos on my website where I talk about biomarkers. And the three most important biomarkers are telomere length measurement, DNA methylation, which some people call epigenetics, but it's not. It's actually methylation is just an epigenetic mechanism. And then the third one is IgG glycosylation, which I think might be the best of the three for measuring aging. But I think the reason why I think telomeres aren't the best for measuring aging is because telomeres are extremely difficult to measure. And most of the companies that provide telomere length measurement tests really can't get consistent, meaningful results. Okay, they can do the best they can, but
And that's,
people.
they've been doing it for a long time, though, it seems like telomere testing, like 10, 15 years, and you're saying it really hasn't gotten too much better?
Well, yeah, I invented all the
I
protocols,
know.
and so I know them forward and backward, and I can tell you I can do the most popular test, the cheapest test. I can do them myself on anybody's DNA, and I can make them be any age they want. And just by slightly changing the temperature or the salt conditions during the reactions, it's like back when I was still at Geron Corporation back in the 1990s. I actually gave a presentation within the company showing how I could change the age of anybody by just, I showed a graph of data one after another which was from the exact same person, but I made that person go all the way from like 20 years old to 60 years old just by slight minor changes in the reaction conditions. So, and I also, you know, I don't have any proof of this, but I'm going to be honest with you. These companies that measure aging, their best source of new customers is previous customers saying, oh, wow, my data says I got younger. You should go get yourself tested. Because if they get data saying that they didn't get younger and they actually got, they're older than they're supposed to be, they don't tell anybody. Okay. And they don't recommend it to their friends.
Yeah. So very similar to in science publication where null results are just buried. They're very important, but they're buried. Only the positive results get headlines and funding and citations.
That's why I consider myself an expert on critical meta-analysis of peer-reviewed studies, is because I can find, whenever I decide to do a search on any particular subject, I can find every answer possible. Okay. And there's one really, really great example that I show in a lot of my videos, and videos with PowerPoint presentations, stuff like that, where an article in one journal, and I won't mention the name, has an article saying that telomerase does not lengthen telomeres. And then 2 weeks later, there is another article in the exact same journal saying telomerase does lengthen telomeres. And it's the same journal, same reviewers, everything like that. And this is why I say you got to do, so not just meta-analysis. I always say you can find support for anything you wish to be true in the peer-reviewed literature. So if you want to find out if green grapes cause your hair to grow longer, you can find a peer-reviewed study that proves that it does. But you got to then say, well, are there any studies that say it doesn't? And then you'll probably find 90 that say it doesn't. And so that's a meta-analysis. Now, critical meta-analysis means that you actually go through, read each paper and read how their experimental design, how did they analyze the data, how did they do the experiments, do you believe the pictures they show and the figures they show and things like that. And you can eliminate it. And even though there's one paper that says green grapes cause your hair to grow long and 90 say it doesn't, it might be that the only legitimate paper is that one.
Okay, so you are licensing some of your products that you've developed. So that is how Sierra Sciences is making most of their money right now?
Oh, yeah, all of it. And I wouldn't call them products. I would call them ingredients that people,
okay,
companies can put into products. Because we don't make products. They have to do the testing and the bottling and everything like that. But, you know, I'm one of the best inventors. I was actually National Inventor of the Year in 1997 because of my inventions, in the United States, at least. So, you know, it's something I'm good at. And if somebody wants an invention of some kind of product, I'm the guy to do it. I just don't get into marketing. And
so you've got the royalties coming in, but you still estimate you would need a lot more funding to get the real work you want to get done. And how much money are you talking about?
Well, to actually come up with a pharmaceutical drug that would reverse the aging process, I estimate it'd be about $130 million. And I've got a business plan that says that if I had that funding, I could have something that's what, six times more potent than one I already mentioned, within 1 to 3 years. The problem is that's not going to be a quick return on investment, because then there's after I invent the product, then it's got to go through FDA clinical studies and things like that. And so it's a long time before anybody getting profit. So everybody was turning me towards nutraceuticals. So we tested tons of nutraceuticals, and yeah, we did get a lot of hits. And there's one company right now who's going to be launching a product called, well, I don't, the product doesn't have a name yet, but it's the company's Touchstone Essentials. Their website is thegoodinside.com, but they're going to be launching a nutraceutical product in that contains our ingredients in probably March of 2025. You know, we think we could actually come up with some really strong nutraceutical. The problem is that you have to do what's called medicinal chemistry to make things more potent and more safe. And as soon as you do any kind of medicinal chemistry to change the structure of a plant extract or something like that, it's no longer a nutraceutical. It becomes a pharmaceutical. It requires FDA approval again. But I'll tell you, the product that's coming out by Touchstone Essentials will be the most potent nutraceutical ever. Okay. And believe me, I've invented all of them that are on the market right now, and or at least played part role of an investor. I was
Or telomerase inducers.
yeah, telomerase inducers, nutraceutical telomerase inducers. So
Okay.
they don't require FDA approval.
Yeah. Speaking of telomerase inducers and telomere biology and research, over the last few years, you know, it's been a while since we talked. What is the most interesting thing you've discovered, or other papers, other researchers have discovered that you've seen that might lead ever more credence to the theory that, hey, if you lengthen the telomeres, you're really going to see some improvement, or you're going to definitely reverse aging?
I would say the best support studies that support everything I'm doing have come out of a company called BioViva, BioViv. And I think you've
Our listeners are very familiar with BioViva and Liz Parrish. And
she's published some papers along with her scientific colleagues, because she's not a scientist. She's got an MBA. She knows more about the scientists than most people, most scientists in the field. So she's published some really good studies showing that there's great signs of age reversal in mice using gene therapy approaches. So gene therapy is something that I've been doing for since the 1970s, really. I've always looked at it as something that could never become a product for the general public. That's why I need to find a nutraceutical or pharmaceutical that people can afford. Because gene therapies, people keep saying the price will come down, the price will come down. But the way the price is going to come down is to be replaced by a pharmaceutical. But in the meantime, I'm very glad that companies like BioViva are providing
at least proving the concept. They're at least proving the concept. Even if the treatment is out of the financial means of most people, when something else comes along, at least it'll be fairly well proven.
So that's probably the biggest support that we have. But other things that have come about have been mostly me doing my own studying of, you know, the what, the why, the how, and the how not of aging. Okay, just taking advantage of my background. I've got a PhD in molecular and population genetics, which is really the study of how genes work and why evolution evolved them to be the way they are, how and why. And so I've been doing a lot of like philosophical studying to really get the answers to a lot of the questions, because very few people know what aging is. I speak on conferences a lot about that now. I think I've got it nailed. And then why do we age? My background in evolution is very strong, and that's something my PhD was in that. And I've actually been able to put together what I call not theories, but actually facts. Okay, there are a lot of theories on why we age, but none of them are necessary, because there's actual facts that explain it.
What facts have you come up with?
Really, aging is quite simple. That's the what is aging is just the decline and failure of multiple tissues and organs. That's all it is. Okay. And so most of the time when you hear somebody talk about what is aging, they will include the why and the how. And the why we age is it actually turns out to be evolutionarily advantaged to the species to eliminate the longer lived. Okay. And this is, I've done a lot of statistical analysis, math, stuff like that. And based on my background of evolution, I've been able to just explain that statistically, aging was unavoidable and inevitable. Okay. That there was no way to avoid it. Not all organisms have evolved an aging process yet, but they will eventually. And because survival of the species is a lot higher during rapidly changing environments when there's a lot of diversity within the species. So when you have multiple traits in a species, there's a higher chance that at least some members of the species will survive the rapidly changing environments. And so if every member of a species is 100% identical, even
and
if
they don't age, then you're not going to get much diversity within the species, is what you're saying.
Right. But the thing is that aging would have never evolved. Okay, there's been multiple, during evolution, so a lot of my talks, I talk about the multiple steps in evolution that have increased diversity within a species. But the biggest change that ever occurred was the evolution of sexual reproduction, which occurred about 2 billion years ago. And the reason why that increased diversity so much was because now all of a sudden genes were shuffled. When A mates with B, you create a new member of the species that has a combination of the two, which
Exactly.
is.
Yeah. So that helped spur more diversity, and those particular sexual reproducing organisms were more successful as a species through time.
But the key thing was is that it is better to then let the offspring interbreed than let the parents rebreed, because there's more shuffling by letting the offspring that are
Got
already
it.
longer. So eliminating the longer lived after. So I always say there's no evolutionary advantage to living longer than it takes to raise your young. After you've raised your young, you're the best thing for the species is to eliminate, okay, so that you don't contribute to the breeding, you don't compete with the offspring, okay, for breeding. Okay, so yeah, evolution, people always talk about survival of the fittest, but it's not survival of the fittest individuals. It's survival of the fittest species that's really, really important. Okay, so, but that's why we evolved an aging process. Okay, and plus, there was nothing to prevent it anyway, because once you have reproduced and passed on your genes and you accumulate mutations and things like that, there's nothing to prevent them. And so they're just going to accumulate. And so we're going to be messed up later on in life anyway, just from accumulation of different things wrong with us. Okay, so that's the why. And I go into a lot more details in my presentations. The how is a really interesting thing. It's because our cells have the ability to divide. And so every time we get a damaged cell, we can have another cell divide to replace that damaged cell. All right. So I always talk about like an organ in the body having what are called frontline cells and reserve cells. The frontline cells are the cells, like let's say on the surface of your kidney or liver or whatever, where all the action is. Well, just normal function makes it so that the wear and tear on these cells gives them an average lifespan of about 1 year. Okay, the frontline cells can survive about 1 year on average, and then they're lost. That's okay because of a reserve cells would be like stem cells and progenitor cells. They would divide and replace that cell. Okay, so given all what I just said, shouldn't we be immortal, just like a bacteria culture? We
Except for the
should.
telomeres get shorter and they can't divide.
That's the problem. Every time the progenitor cells or stem cells divide to replace those damaged cells, the telomeres get shorter, and as a result, you can only divide a limited number of times. And when you do the math on that, given that in normal operations you lose a frontline cell every year, that puts us at a theoretical maximum of 125 years. Okay. And that's the only true hard cutoff there is in all the field of anti-aging. There's nothing that can be mathematically predicted like telomere shortening can to explain why we age.
So, we're talking about the hard limit, 125 years. But let's say we solve telomere shortening, that Sierra Sciences comes up with a great telomerase inducer, and everyone can take it, and it's cheap, and that really helps people reverse some aspects of aging. Now, there are other things that are happening within the body that could be very important. Do you know, or do you have an idea, one or two things that would be the next top priority for an aging organism?
Well, yeah, let me first say the war is not going to be won with just one battle. Okay.
Right.
So I'm trying to break the 125 year barrier. Okay. But we also need to be able to be healthy and live as long as possible. And so if you want to live to be 110, you need to be doing, and so one or two things I would say antioxidants and anti-inflammatories. Okay. Those two are most important. There's so many great companies that are providing great products. I literally take 80 supplements a day. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, obviously you go to conferences. I've seen you, I've met you in person a couple of times, and you look great for your age. I mean, I would say I compliment you on that. And many people were wondering, yeah, well, they know you're a marathon runner, ultra marathon runner, and that keeps you young and fit. But then the supplements. And so you do take quite a few, and a lot of them you would say are anti-inflammatory, antioxidant type things.
Yes. Well, and other things too. By the way, I turned 73 in about 3 weeks from now. So,
Oh.
yeah, but I'm trying to get ready to break the world record for running 100 mile distance for my age group, and I think it'll be super easy. I just got to find the right course and the right time. But okay, so the supplements, you wanted me to just say one or two, and that's antioxidants, anti-inflammatories. And but well, first of all, the books by Dr. Sandra Kaufman are the best books. She's written two books. They're the best things to read about what supplements to take then there's great sources of getting things like Life Extension, which I'm a really big fan of, Dave Asprey, which I'm a very big fan of. They have really great products, supplements and stuff like that, that you can take to get yourself to be 110, because it might take that long before I actually come up with something that'll make it so you can live to be 130, okay, to break that 125-year barrier. The thing is that nobody on the planet yet has figured out a way to overcome that 125-year barrier, except the work that Liz Parrish is doing at BioViva. And that's still in the research. She's doing clinical studies and stuff. People can get into the clinical studies, and I'm looking forward to seeing what results come out of that. The reason I take 80 supplements is because I've read Sandra Kaufman's book, Forward and Backward and Every Other Which Way You Can, and she makes more sense than anybody I've ever read. And so I just do what she says.
Well, okay. Yeah, thanks for providing those possible avenues people can explore. You know, Sandy Kaufman, I'm familiar with her, and Life Extension, Dave Asprey, many people are familiar with him as well. So they can check that out, check their current supplement regimens and their rationales. So thanks so much for that, Bill. And thanks so much for joining us on the Longevity Now podcast.
Thank you.
As is the case with most of the researchers, doctors, and advocates I interview here on the podcast, Sierra Sciences needs support to run robust clinical trials. No matter if it is telomere lengthening or damage repair or cellular reprogramming, the trials need to be done. Products need to be developed. Whatever you can do to help move things along, please do. Advocate for funding. Plead for less burdensome and more efficient regulations, make more media, extolling the benefits of reversing aging. These are all things we can all do to help out. Until next time, I'm Justin Lowe.